Hey there, welcome to another episode of Dead Frog Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Felix. This is a podcast dedicated to understanding and analyzing the art that is stand-up comedy. Today, we'll be talking about one of my favorite stand-ups of all time. Probably the person, if not introduced into my life, I would not be a stand-up today. Mitch Hedberg. Mitch Hedberg was born in St. Paul, Minnesota. Minnesota, much like, I think, our guest today, I didn't ask. He was a stand-up from 1989 to 2005 before his untimely death. He appeared at the Montreal Just for Laughs Festival three times. He has three albums, Strategic Grill Locations, Mitch Altogether, Do You Believe in Gosh? And then Time Magazine dubbed him the next Jerry Seinfeld. And with me today, the person chuckling in the background, now to move to the foreground, is Caleb Chapman. Caleb is a very funny guy. I've recently met him virtually over Zoom because of quarantine, and he runs Caleb and Patrick's variety show. Patrick Lopez is a friend of the pod, great guy, and they've been putting like that show in all of its iterations has been, I think, one of the best online shows that I've been on. I think Caleb and Patrick have a really great rapport, and their bits are phenomenal. So, you know, they will have they have an upcoming one, which is Caleb and Patrick Get Happy. Wait, no, it's wait. Do you guys have one coming up?
It's February 13th. Caleb and Patrick need therapists, but are doing a comedy show instead.
Perfect. Yeah, that, what a way to summarize the idiosyncrasy of being a stand-up comedy comic. And Caleb is also a UCB alumni. He wrote alum in his description, but I'm gonna say the whole word because what does it cost me to say the NI after?
Doesn't sound
and cool. It doesn't. what about UCB emeritus?
Ooh, that's good. I like that. Valedictorian.
Yeah. What if you were the class clown at UCB? and then another upcoming show. Oh wait, they have a podcast coming up, which is a Caleb and Patrick Get Happy podcast. Interesting that you came up with the name, or that you said the name first without publishing any episodes. That's very optimistic.
We have recorded episodes, and then we were like, yeah, that's a trial run. That one's not going to work. We got to adjust this, adjust that. So,
yeah. Oh, okay. I spoke out of turn, and that's good. And you guys, I'm looking forward to the release because you guys are very funny together.
Thank you.
And tell me more about the socialist sketch show.
So that's something I've just kind of been working on off and on. Just writing like sketches that are based on kind of exposing like delusions that are surround like other ideologies, specifically like socialism, and trying to like make it funny in a way that it's digestible to learn about, so you can learn about something while also laughing, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of just like a side project that I've been working on for a while that hopefully I'll be able to shoot some point in the next year or so and get that going.
You know, I was thinking about this because I've always wanted to do something like that, and like I do write sketch, but when I run it by people, they're just like, okay, because it's like it can be very heavy-handed.
Yeah.
And a recent idea I had was like someone like a QAnon representative, like in front of a like it was a news press conference or whatever, mm-hmm. right? Where he reveals himself or she reveals themselves. And they're like, okay, why are we getting made fun of? Why are we the ridicule of the late night and press, right?
Right.
Because look, you know, here's a slippery slope. Because if we get uncovered to be a bunch of like losers who have poor rational faculties that lead to like that we use to cover up our hidden racism and like nature to create let's sort a spectacle out of the news and blah blah blah, then it's a domino effect where then people who believe in astrology, people who believe in eugenics, racism overall, it'll all be undermined. All right, then society's gonna have to confront the fact that the lay people don't have a robust system of knowledge and logic. Right. So that's the premise. He's like, look, you gotta stop making fun of us, because eventually they're gonna start making fun of you, and eventually religion.
I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah. Anyways, thanks for humoring that. I forgot that we're in the middle of a podcast. When did you start comedy?
So I've kind of been just like writing more than performing longer. But I mean, like, I started acting and doing like drama and stuff like that in high school. And there was, I typically got the roles that were funnier. I usually got like larger roles where I could show like a wide range of just like humor and things like that, you know? But I didn't really get into like doing stand up. And I still don't do it as much as I should or want to, but I didn't really get into that until like maybe 5-6 years ago.
Oh, okay.
That's when I started getting like occasional performances, things like that, and started doing more and more sketch. But I'd been writing for a while before that, just was hesitant to get up on stage.
Yeah, that's an interesting, I think what you did is interesting, because it's a combination of two things, which I feel like are often two separate personality types. You have the people who start by writing, and they become really good the writers in comedy, and then they end up getting, like, you know, staffed.
Right.
At TV shows or whatever. And, you know, that's what comics want. But then there's the other side, which is actors, people who start by acting, then becoming stand-ups, which is a different sort of entity that I think is led with very strong stage presence.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, they kind of work through their jokes on stage. But you've described, I think, what seems to be an oxymoron, which is like someone who started off acting, then became a writer, then became a stand-up.
Yeah, I got ugly for a little bit. I guess I like to say for a little bit, but it's probably still there.
Oh, damn. Well, you know, it happens to the worst of us. That's good. Oh, do you really think that's what it was? You're like, oh, man. Is it the self-confidence thing?
I don't know. I think a little bit. I think it had a lot to do with, like, trying to figure out just, you know, what I'm going to do with my life in general, too. And it seemed like, you know, art is one of those things where it's like, yeah, I wish I could make a living off of that. Until you get to the point where you're like, no, I'm going to. Like, there's just not a choice anymore. I'm going to do it.
Yeah, I've dug myself into a hole. I've developed the ability to dig holes. And therefore, I have to turn this into my career into digging holes.
Yeah,
yeah. And that tracked down to being a comedian, because you're like, I'm incredible. I'm in incredible debt. I'm like in the worst living situation. I've developed one skill kind of for the past couple of years, and that's comedy.
Yeah, it's in the hopes that it works out.
Yeah. Hey. So I do love that. I love that you're so honest with me and my listeners. I jokingly want to say me and my 5 listeners, but I looked at the numbers again. It's pretty good turnout.
Nice.
Yeah. Even though by the way, I don't know if you know this, I haven't done this podcast in like 6 months.
Oh, really?
So this is the second season. You're the first guest on the second season, and we're talking about my favorite comic.
Nice. That's pretty pretty honorable there.
What do you mean?
I'm honored to.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. I was like, oh, he's condoning my actions. For what? For giving up for a bit? I've always been wondering if I should tell the audience why I stopped doing the podcast. And it, I'll tell you, I guess I will real quick. You know, it's hard to get guests who will do the very small task of choosing a standard flick to talk about. So, you know, it's very discouraging. So, like, if you guys get guests on your podcast, I hope that there are people who you can, you know, rely on. Which I know I can rely on you, Caleb. So thanks a lot.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think it's, I think right now in general, it's kind of hard to rely on people for a lot of things.
Yeah, everyone's going like lackadaisical and uninspired.
Yep.
So wait, I am rusty, so my transitions are kind of bad. So you explained to us, okay, can you tell us a little bit more about your history at the UCB?
Yeah, so I did all four levels of improv there within, I mean, I think it was like a 6 to 8 month period. So it was just like a straight stretch of just doing improv for like 6 months. And then I was also doing the sketch program towards the second half of that. So I was kind of just, I dove right in and just kind of soaked in all of the information that I could and went to as many shows as I could. And I think I gained a lot out of it, and just more than, I mean, the skills, obviously, you take a lot from something like that, but just like the, and it's so cliche, and this is what they tell you, like, when you first start there, when they're trying to get you to go there, but, like, it really is, like, the people you meet. Like, you can, I've met people that, and then branched that off into meeting other people, and it's a great way to just network in general, I guess, was. I don't know if you, kind of hard to do it online now, but
I
learned a lot. I got to meet some interesting people, and definitely it was definitely an inspiring experience too.
Yeah, I think that's the greatest takeaway after spending like thousands of dollars in comedy training. And that's like you get to meet people who can actually work with you, who want to work with you, and who will like keep you in mind if you're, you know, if you're good or relevant to the work that they come across. Mm-hmm. They're like, hey, this person is good at this kind of humor. Maybe we can ask them to join our sketch writing team, or we can work on a pilot together or a feature. And that's, I think that's one of the coolest things that we can do. Like who gets the opportunity to do that?
Right.
Like in normal society.
Right. I feel like, and I mean, like, it would be awesome if we could give more people that opportunity. It sucks that it comes down to having to spend so much money to get it.
Yeah.
And it'd be great if we could just like have that type of like experience within our communities. Like, I don't understand, like, there's no really good reason why we couldn't do that. I guess UCB is becoming a non-for-profit allegedly.
Yeah.
But, yeah, if we just had like more of those, more like community theaters for people to go do that at, and like comedians could just be like, hey, this is where the open mic is all the time. Like, no ifs, ands, and buts, you know, it'd be great.
Yeah. And this is a perfect time to segue into the Caleb Chapman diversity for the working class scholarship. Diversity and the working class scholarship. So you were telling me that you were going to give up to $10,000 a month to 100 potential students of comedy.
This is what is it, Mike's Tots all over again?
Yeah. They just have to pay for the classes first, and then you'll reimburse them.
I'll reimburse them in 150 years.
Yeah. you just end up buying them like the same you know how Michael Scott bought that guy, I guess, well, he bought batteries and he bought that guy his textbooks or something.
Yeah.
You buy them that UCB, that improv book that they sell, and you buy them like maybe an oat chata latte from the the Inner Sanctum Cafe.
Maybe a CBD brownie in there too.
Oh yeah, the CBD drinks and the CBD brownies and the ayahuasca cold brews.
Always get one of those right before class.
Yeah. And if you're a student, you get 10% off one time.
Caleb, why do you keep all of your scenes are about machine elves? What's going on?
Yeah. All of your scenes are about like time travel But like, it feels like since you've done ayahuasca, they should be even a little bit more boundary pushing when it comes to metaphysics. But you just keep doing time travel. Right.
DMT improv would be an interesting experience.
I think at that point it's just performance art, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But imagine being that good of an improviser that you can improvise on DMT.
I mean, any drug, really, like any psychedelic anyways, I guess. I don't know. Maybe like meth improv would be hilarious, though. Like people just, they're like wired. So it's like, so everything's impulsive. They don't have any time to think anyway. So.
Yeah. It's surprising to me that, you know, those people who put on really bad comedy shows at like bars with really bad comedy flyers and like just like 100 people on the lineup.
Oh, yeah.
I'm surprised those people haven't started getting into improv, because you would definitely see meth prov.
Yeah. I kind of want to go to Oregon now instead of like an improv group that's just a bunch of people that do meth. Sell it to Netflix. Book me.
Oh, hell yeah, dude. Oh, yeah, that'd be a great like travel log series. You trying to, like, going to different cities and testing local improv groups on their abilities, but like it's like first normal improv, then you have them do improv, you know, like in front of a geriatric facility. All right, then you have them do improv at like a prison, and then you have them do improv at a funeral. Then we have them do improv on that.
What suggestion are you going to get from prison? I just need a suggestion for a one word really quick.
Yeah, what is it?
I don't know.
Is it something like the, what is a word that? Yeah, I can't improvise right now. Okay, so, okay, all right. Before we get into this, I want to ask you one thing, which is, do you remember your first joke or bit or character or like whatever that you've done?
So the first character that I did that got real laughs, I don't remember how old I was. I think I was like 14 or 15, but I had to do this character where it was like this drunk Irishman. I was like a 14-year-old. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to go really, really over the top with it. And like a bad Irish accent, but it was like enough to be like, okay, that's an Irish. You could recognize that it was Irish accent, but like, it was just so bad. And I had to do like a 10-minute monologue before a play, but I had everybody cracking up throughout the entire monologue. And after that, like, I remember going backstage and just being like, oh, that felt so good. Like 100 people laughing at what you're doing. And you just like, it's crazy that you're able to use like your body and your voice to produce that much laughter for somebody. And I think at that moment, it's kind of clicked.
Did you feel the power?
Yeah, exactly.
Right, that's the power. That's the reason why people get into politics, right? Like that feeling.
Yeah.
All the time. No, that's great. And then how soon after doing that did you do it again?
So I stayed doing like plays and stuff like that all throughout high school, and then that's
all right, tight. What motivated you to start writing your own stuff?
I think part of it just like I've the more I watch, the more I'm like, oh, what if you did this? This would be funny. The more I watch other people's work. And also just like throughout my day-to-day life, I look at things in a way where it's like, how could I make this funny? So it felt like it was important to just start writing that stuff down. And then when I wrote it down, I'm like, oh, this is funny. And then I kept writing. So it was like a necessity, basically.
Yeah, it is. It's like people don't talk about the human experience in that sort of way, but you definitely like, you know, there's that understanding that comedy is a form of, is a type of intelligence, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, I think it's very clear that it very likely is, because you get to observe, like, how the world is kind of odd.
Mm-hmm.
But also you get to then, you know, when I talk about something crass or something that is unfortunate, you laugh because you realize that is unfortunate. You understand, we understand as humans, like it's almost like you're reinstating values.
Mm-hmm.
So you get, yeah, as when you're a comedy writer, you do that all the time. Where I'm not going to get into this now, but you know, people when they're like, when they posit certain like racy stuff, I don't mean race, but like racy, mm-hmm. and they're like, people are like, oh, that's not that funny. And it's like, oh no, what they're doing is like something more meta, right? It's like, no, what if this was, imagine a character, we all know this is wrong, but what if there's someone who actually enacted this? But that's neither here nor there. Okay, we're gonna talk about Mitch Hedberg, right? All right, lost you.
No, yeah,
lost
you. All right.
It's over. I talked about that and then you were gone. Okay, so yeah, we're gonna talk about Mitch Hedberg. This is his part of his Just for Laughs performance. It's called you can find it on YouTube. It's called Why I Hate Daydreaming. But before you hear that, you're going to hear a word from our sponsor. And we'll be right back.
For the hilarious Mitch Hedberg.
I like to wear this pass because it helps me know when I'm upside down. Hey, I was getting my teeth whitened, but then I said, forget that, I'll just get a tan instead. I saw a billboard. It said, estimated lotto jackpot, $55 million. See, I didn't know that shit was estimated. That would suck if you want to go, oh, we were off by 2 zeros. We estimate that you are angry. I like rice. Rice is great when you're hungry and you want 2,000 of something. I saw a commercial on late night TV. It said, forget everything you know about slipcovers. So I did. And it was a load off my mind. Then the commercial tried to sell slipcovers, but I didn't know what the hell they were. You guys are cool, man. Canada is all right. I like the American-Canadian border, because if you're walking along the border with a friend and you push your friend into Canada, he can't push you back right away, because first he has to go through customs. What brings you to Canada, that asshole? When you leave it, when I regain my equilibrium. I went to the doctor. All he did was suck blood from my neck. Do not go see Dr. Acula. Dr. Scholl makes foot products. And he's a doctor, so he went to school for a long time. But it doesn't take a lot to figure out that stepping on a cushion will be more comfortable. That guy wasted lots of time at school. Because I'd have bought that shit from a Mr. Show. Maybe even a Senor Show. I got a belt on that's holding up my pants, and my pants have belt loops that hold up my belt. I don't know what's really happening down there. Who is the real hero? I walk by a dry cleaner at 3 a.m. and the sign says, sorry, we're closed. You don't have to be sorry. It's 3 a.m. and you're a dry cleaner. It would be ridiculous for me to expect you to be open. I'm not gonna walk in at 10 a.m. and say, hey man, I walked by at 3 and you guys were closed. Somebody owes me an apology. I called the hotel operator. She said, how can I direct your call? Well, you could say action. And I will begin to dial. Then when I say goodbye, you can yell cut. And if you want, you can wear a beret and knickers. Is a hippopotamus, or a really cool apotamus? Hey man, if you're a fish and you want to become a fish stick, you have to have very good posture. You can't be a slouchy fish or you will be a fish clump. I went to the store, I bought 8 apples. The clerk said, do you want me to put them in a bag? I said, oh no, man, I juggle. But I can only juggle 8. If I'm ever here buying 9 apples, bag them up. I got a new CD. It's in stores. And when you have a CD in stores, you have to do in-store appearances. If nobody shows up, I just pretend like I'm shopping. That's how I shop. I sit behind a table with a pen. I hate to dream. Dreaming takes energy. Sleeping is supposed to be a relaxing affair. I lay down on the bed. It feels great. Next thing you know, I have to build a go-kart with my ex-landlord. Hey, if you can't sleep, count sheep. Don't count endangered animals. You will run out. I order the club sandwich all the time, and I'm not even a member, man. I don't know how I get away with it. I like my sandwiches with 3 pieces of bread. So do I. Well, let's form a club. Okay, but we need some more stipulations. Yes, we do. Instead of cutting the sandwich once, let's cut it again. Hell yeah, 4 triangles. We'll position them into a circle. And in the middle, we will dump chips. Or potato salad. Cool. I can deal with that. Let me ask you a question. How you feel about frilly toothpicks? I'm for them. Well, this club is formed then. I like to take a toothpick and throw it in the forest and say, you're home. Some people think I'm high on stage. I would never get high before a show. Because when I'm high, I don't want to stand in front of a bunch of people that I don't know. That does not sound comfortable. Like when you're high and a joke doesn't work, it's extra scary. It's like, whoa, what the hell happened there? I am retreating within myself. Why have all these people gathered? And why am I elevated? Why am I not facing the same way as everyone else? And what is this electric stick in my hand? I like the way this is situated here. It seems like you guys were chasing me, closing in, then said, fuck it, let's sit down. All right, thank you very much.
Oh, damn, that Mitch Hedberg. We just heard that together. And for maybe the first time. Wow. And now we're going to talk about it. Caleb, why Mitch Hedberg?
I think that, like, part of it is definitely just being from Minnesota and, like, knowing that, having seen where he grew up and, like, having experienced that it plays a part. But I think that just, like, the idea of a one-liner is, it seems so, like, easy and basic sometimes. Mm-hmm. But then you get people that are, like, really good at it, like Hedberg. Jeselnik's another really good one. But
who?
Anthony Jeselnik.
Oh, yeah, Jeselnik, yeah.
But, yeah, Hedberg, just the way that he's able to, like, stand up there, he doesn't seem very smart, but he is, like, incredibly intelligent. And he shows that with, like, very quick, witty jokes that, like, make you immediately, like, your whole perspective shifts within, like, 2 sentences where he says something. You're like, wait, oh, that does make sense. That's weird. But, yeah, he's able to do what a lot of comedians are unable to do in far more words.
Wait, and far... Oh, yeah, he's able to do in fewer words what
right.
other comedians do in far more words. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Like, you know, when I was reading up on, well, when I was doing the Wikipedia search, and I saw that they compared him to Seinfeld, I was like, no, Mitch, I mean, like, Seinfeld had more fluff.
Right.
He was like, can you believe this? Are you seeing this? And where Hedberg was like, this is the thing that you should observe.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and it felt Seinfeld felt like he was okay, I don't know if this makes sense, but Seinfeld felt like he was doing it for laughs. Hedberg felt like he was doing it because he thought it was funny.
Yeah, definitely. That's a huge, like, division in their interests, like, not just as a performer, but, like, socially.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's the same reason why I think people ask, you know, me, like, why'd you get into comedy? It's like, oh, because I thought it was something funny and I felt compelled. Like, I was, like, gripped by the throat and someone told me, you like, you know, something inside me told me, you have to tell this joke on stage.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah, Mitch Hedberg, I think, has the same sort of thing. And I like, I like that Mitch has these jokes that are described as deadpan. And because he does have a sort of, like, those jokes are very, like, writery, and, like, they're very great. They're quippy. And, but you, from, like, the history that I know of, like, Hedberg, of, like, of him being so mellow, it's interesting that even within a deadpan voice, he has these really strong deliveries where he enunciates. And I think they're very different than any other comics. What's the word? Delivery?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say essentially I when I talk in that sort of way.
Yeah, I think that, and with performing too, I talk differently when I perform than when I don't perform. But one thing about Hedberg too is like the way that he over enunciates some things, it really, because of how I talk differently, I wonder if like that's how he's, you know, if like if he really spoke like that, or if that was more of like a stage thing. Because he seemed really shy and like reserved, like he'd probably be more like you know, like.
Yeah, yeah. So, air conditioner. Yeah, over enunciates. Wait, is that I don't know. Is this a Minnesota accent?
Kind of. He does have like a little bit of one. But I would say yes, but like the Minnesotan accent most people think of is like over exaggerated.
Okay. What like can you, does anything come to mind? Do you know what words kind of are Minnesota-y?
Yeah, I can do a Minnesota, like the over exaggeration of Minnesotan accent sounds a little bit like this. And they say we gotta go get in a boat so we can get back to the cabin in time for the fish market.
Oh, that's not too far away from Bobby Boucher.
Yeah, yeah, similar. It's, I don't know, it's like I don't know.
What about, but what's Mitch Hedberg doing that is Minnesota-y?
I think it's maybe just how he talks. I'm not sure. But there's like something familiar about it to me. Just the way that he sounds.
Well, the reason I'm like harping so much on his voice is because, you know, stand-ups have particular voices, and that helps them stand out, and that helps people want to hear, because they, it's almost like a refresh, it's like something new, you, it's unfamiliar, and you want to hear what they're saying, because it's kind of pleasing to hear someone new, like, you know, obviously Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Stephen Wright, Rodney Dangerfield, they all have voices that are often impersonated but seldom just like that anyone really normally has.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mitch, yeah, he, you know, distinguishes himself with, yeah, a slight Minnesota accent, with over enunciation. Obviously, his stage presence is something that people talk about often. But because he was one of the first people that I watched do stand up, I never thought it was like odd.
Yeah, I never did either. That's how I felt about it too. It's like he looked. It looks uncomfortable, but at the same time, for him, it doesn't.
Yeah, for him, it doesn't. Yeah. I think that's very funny. It's like, you know, imagine like, you know, when people are like, hey, why don't you put on a jacket? It's cold. It's like, oh, no, it's not cold for me. You're cold.
Right.
you're uncomfortable. Can you leave me alone so I can perform? Like, imagine how much, like, how... I'm sure at first he was sort of insecure that he presented himself as unsure,
mm-hmm.
or uneasy on stage. But then at some point he just had to get tired of it because, you know, he was incredibly successful at it.
Yeah, I'm sure he just got – he was probably super uncomfortable. Like, and if I remember right, he had, like, anxiety. And maybe he was, like – I don't know. Maybe he was – I don't remember if he was getting high before shows or not, but – but yeah, he like had the long hair and the sunglasses and everything, and it's like that just kind of like looks like somebody that is just gonna sink in the second that anything goes off. But like, I think the more that he did it, the more he just got comfortable. And he's like, well, I'm not going to change myself. I'm going to stay being this person. But here's what my thing is now.
Yeah, this is my thing. And yeah, after doing comedy for a while, you're like, this is me on my toes. And you're like, yeah, you're comfortable. And that's, I think, that's, I'm going to force a segue by talking about like his opening joke for this act, which is like, you know, I wear this this pass. He's wearing a, since he's part of the festival, he's wearing a pass. And, you know, he's like, I wear this because it lets me know that when I'm upside down. Which is a good joke. I think, you know, no matter how much you craft like pre-written jokes and jokes that you've been doing for a while, a new joke just feels so amazing. Like an observation.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm glad he started out with that, because it really, I think it caused people, you know, attendees to really like listen to what he's saying, because they're like, oh, that's an he's being witty, right? He's an intelligent guy.
I feel like it brings them into the moment too. Like, it's easy for audiences to get distracted, especially, I think he was at like a festival or something like that, looked like, but like easier for an audience to get distracted and to be like thinking about like, oh, I'm sitting, I'm not upside down right now. They're like thinking about how they're sitting too. So it kind of like brings more awareness to them, like,
oh snap, yeah, he reminds them that they're in a body,
right? You are here in front of me, listen. Oh, okay.
Then he moves on to wanting to get his teeth whitened, and then halfway through he, you know, decides, you know, I'd rather get a tan. I'm not gonna do verbatim the jokes,
right.
I'm purposefully not doing that. Yeah. Okay, we're not going to talk about that. All right, so then third joke, he talks about the bill. He's watching a billboard and looking at the jackpot and how that's estimated, right? He finds out later that it's estimated, which is a great observation. And I think this is my first comment on his material from like a technical aspect. He goes, you know, it would be a bummer if, you know, you know, it's estimated, and it'd be fun. It'd be like a bummer to find out that they were off by two zeros. Which, that's the thing. That number two, right? You're like, yeah, that's likely two, and then that has a good impact because that severely, you know, decreases the value of the jackpot, right? If it's one, it's not that much of a big deal, right? It goes from $1 million to $100,000, which is not that bad, right? If it's $1 million and it goes down to $10,000, then it's a big deal. But if you said three zeros, we're, you know, we find out it was off by three zeros, it's unbelievable.
Right. Right. Yeah, I feel like he kind of like, he's able to use like the very like fine line of like, should I do this or this? And he's able to like nail it most of the time.
Yeah.
Like where the,
and
sorry, go ahead.
Well, that's because it's like a natural proclivity to want to be good at. But also, you know, you sometimes you say three zeros or four zeros and you realize, oh, that's bad. Mm-hmm. And you reflect on it and you're like, damn, should it be 1 0? Then you try that out and you're like, damn, the 1 0 didn't hit. What about two zeros?
That's the one.
But what were you about to say?
Oh, I just said that's the one.
No, before you politely let me say my comment.
I lost it.
It was probably a perfect idea. It was probably a really amazing idea, and then I ruined it, so I apologize.
No, that's my brain. It's like, oh, here's a really good idea, 2 seconds there, and it's gone.
Oh, yeah, that's why you have to write things down. Yeah. Okay, the rice thing, one of the best jokes, I think, in history. Because it's a universal thing because of so many cultures eating rice. And then he points out the fact that, you know, it's a ton of rice that you're eating, a ton of individual little things.
It also shows like, because it's using like a food that's eaten more in other countries than America. And then it's also showing like the overeating the tendencies of Americans. So it's like, hey, look, Americans, you could just be eating what other countries eat and you can get more of it. Look.
I didn't think about that that way. That's interesting. If you were a true capitalist, if you're a true, individualist who thought all good things for themselves in plenitude, then you would eat rice.
Right.
Yeah.
You can get more and more and more of it.
Hell, it's a dollar for like 5 pounds. That's at least 1 million rice. Yeah. That's very funny. Oh, I like the slipcovers thing. That joke is, you know, a commercial said, forget everything you know about slipcovers. So I did, and I didn't know what they were trying to sell me. Which is, yeah, it's one of those things where it's a matter of being the first one to come up with the joke. Because I'm sure a ton of people have heard that line. But, and like, you thought it'd be funny. Yeah. Like, you know, you're like thinking to yourself, that's weird that they asked me to do that, right? Like, why do I keep hearing the same? Forget everything you know about Tide Pods. Forget everything you know about washing your balls. This is a new thing. This is how you shave your balls, right? Forget everything you know. And you hear it constantly up until this day. And he was, one of the few people on tape to be able to subvert that, right? To ridicule it. Like, that really lame spiel.
And it's so precise too. It's just, but it's also something that, like, if you're working in, like, say a restaurant and a guest comes in and is like, tells you this joke and you're having like a rough day, you're going to look at that guy and be like, what? What are you saying? Like, but the fact that it was Hedberg on stage looking like he did, acting like he did, it was, I think that's what kind of made it more than just a dad joke.
Yeah, because, yeah, you can see him late at night, you know, munching on some munchies, smoking a little weed, right, just flipping through channels. Like, he kind of does represent the everyman. He represents, like, mm-hmm. you, like, after 10 o'clock, just trying to figure out what to do. I like the American-Canadian border joke.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting. I like that one. I think this is the first time he curses in his set. Oh, what brought really? You to Canada? That asshole over there. anything to say about that one?
I just like that one because I grew up pretty close to like the Canadian border. So like the idea of, but also like when I grew up, there wasn't like border patrol. So you could just walk across. I don't know. I just imagine myself as a kid with my older brother, and he's pissing me off, and I just shove him over, and then, sorry, mom and dad can't get you back.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, that's awful. Okay, so here's the thing, right? The Dr. Acula joke. It's a great joke. I'm curious about how often it was said before. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's been said after because Scrubs did a Dr. Acula thing. That
oh, really?
Yeah, that gets mentioned a few times throughout the series. And I think that feels like a filler joke because of how I think often, I'm only speculating, but I feel like that joke's been told several times before.
Probably, yeah.
Sorry.
I think that's one of the things with one-liners too, is that it's way easier to accidentally or purposely lift material than it is like a long premise joke.
Yeah, I often call out my friend of the pod, Ian Zandi,
mm-hmm.
for accidentally, writing jokes that strongly overlap. Other jokes. But I think it's because he's so, yeah, when you're a one-liner comedian, because it's such a short setup, you have to be prolific in how many you write, so often you're gonna run into things that have been said before. Sorry, Mitch. Underbrain.
You hack.
You incredibly successful hack. Okay. Then there's the Dr. Scholl bit, which is a funny observation. Then the Mr. Scholl. Then the Senor Scholl, which is, it's good. It's a good, it's like beautiful tags. Because, yeah, he does the Dr. Scholl. I would have, you know, I would have bought that from a Mr. Scholl. Then there's the tag of even the Senor Scholl. And you can see him waiting.
Yeah.
For people to laugh from the Mr. Scholl so he can say the Senor Scholl thing, because he knows it's worth the wait. And the joke hits so well. And here's the thing. If you tell a joke and you wait too long between the setup, I mean the punchline and the delivering the tag, and the punchline wasn't that good to begin with, the tag doesn't get as big of a payoff as you want it to.
Right.
Belt. Oh, this is one of my favorite things, the belt bit, because it's almost like pre-Socratic. It's almost like ancient Greek philosophy, right? Because he sets up a conundrum that is clearly not a conundrum, right? We understand what's happening with the belt, right? But like, have you ever heard of, I think it's Zeno's paradox, or like the thing about movement, where it's impossible to move from point A to B, because before you reach point B, you actually have to walk from point, or move from point A to C. But before you reach, again, it's like you have to reach the midpoint. But before you reach the midpoint of C, from A to C, you have to reach D, which is the midpoint between A and C. Right? And so, and because there are so, like, infinitely many steps, it's motion is impossible. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But Mitch Hedberg does that with belts. It's like, it sounds like a philosophical conundrum, but in reality, it's just a fun observation.
I like to think that, like, and I mean, I like to think of this, like, about any comedian or artist I like, but I like to think that they thought a little bit more in depth about what they're doing. I don't usually do it myself, but... Or it's usually like after the fact, like after you create something, it's easier to be like, oh, I could see that as an allegory for this or whatever, you know, like it's easier to give meaning after the fact. But I like to think of them doing that while they're writing.
You know, this podcast kind of works on the premise that stand-ups are doing that sort of reflection on the at the subconscious level.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I mean, subconsciously, positive that that's what's happening for sure.
Yeah, it's funny because like you'll have stand-ups who are like brilliant and you're like, that's an amazing phenomenal observation, and then you'll like read into it and they're like, oh yeah, what, no, I don't mean that, right? It's like, oh, I think you know you're doing that, but your actual conscious is too dumb to understand that,
right?
Then you're doing something brilliant and they're like, no, I'm just being funny, dude.
It's a dick joke, dude. No, there's more.
Then there, oh, the 3 a.m. dry cleaner joke. We're sorry, we're closed at 3 a.m., which is like a, what kind of joke is this? This is a taking it at face value, or yeah, being too literal with the understanding of a sign, which like reading signs, any sort of sign that you encounter like on a day-to-day is subject to a really good one-liner, which is like how I would, if I were to teach a stand-up class, I'd be like, just read signs and like take them literally and see what happens. Like, you know, you've heard that like no U-turn joke?
I don't think so.
Which is like, no, it's like, no, it says no, U-turn. Like, don't keep going, you turn. Right. Kind of like I do this other joke. I don't know if you remember, which it was like I was driving around the west side of LA the other day and I ended up getting lost. And there I saw a sign that read drive as if your kids and pets lived here. And I didn't know what to do because one, I don't have any kids, but also I have no idea how to drive in the world where my hypothetical children and pets were able to obtain a loan to live in such a neighborhood. Yeah, so I think signs, and that's one of those things where he really takes sorry we're closed as a literal thing of them being apologetic.
Yeah, and that's another thing that's like subconsciously, was he thinking about like how he does comedy too, where he's like, he does take signs literally in comedy as well as in that joke?
Mm-hmm.
I might be reaching a little bit far on that one, but...
Yeah. I'm going to be thinking about that, though. What was Caleb saying? Okay. Yeah, like, no, like, your brain, no, I think, Yeah, there's an incredible overlap, right? There's the persona who is like taking that literally, but then there has to be the real reality, the lived experience where you read signs and you take them literally because that's who you are as a person, right? For me, I think there's very little difference between me on stage and me as a person. Like the same faculties that make me like, you know, a personable adult are the same faculties that I use for stand-up. Is that what you were talking about?
Yeah, kind of. I was pointing out like more like he was integrating the premise of his joke back into what he was already doing with the audience.
Oh, what do you mean then?
So like he's interpreting, you're saying that like he's interpreting signs literally, like that's the joke, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like when he does stand up, the way he probably, I mean, I'm assuming, I guess I can't assume, but I would guess that the way that he does his material is by reading their signs literally from the audience. Like as an audience does this, you read their sign and then you do what you're doing. But
yeah. Do you think he is one of those stand-ups who will change up his material in response to the audience?
I don't know, I guess.
I mean, stand-ups in general. Maybe if we zoom out a little bit and we talk about stand-ups as a whole, then yes.
Yeah. Maybe like tweak it. He might like tweak it, you know what I mean? Where like we were talking about earlier with like the, how many do I do? 1, 2, 3.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, okay, there we go. That's it. All right. I agree. We have to, I think for a comedy podcast, we have to deal with these sorts of, like, the thing that you brought up. I think it's important. Once again, this is a teaching podcast, and that's the only way I can get away with ripping videos off YouTube and playing them on my podcast. Then there's the hotel operator. He's making a call at a hotel, right? How can I direct your call? Once again, he takes the direct literally, right? And he sets up a whole situation where she dresses up like a director. So that's kind of the same kind of joke back to back. Then we have the hippopotamus, right? I don't know what there is to say about that other than it's a play on words. Or like he posits something very silly, which is an hippopotamus.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't think most people would get away with that
at all. Yeah. I have a mandate joke that plays the same sort of thing. The fish stick posture joke, which is, I feel like, a joke that was said by Hedberg, and then years later, Matt and Trey Parker, or whatever their name is, they were like, oh, fish dicks.
Yep. Yep, that's probably exactly where that came from.
Are you being facetious?
No, I'm serious. Like, it wouldn't surprise me if they were like, sorry, that did sound, I was like, wow, that does sound sarcastic and like mad about it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's what they did. Sure, South Park just ripped somebody off. No, that is probably like what happened. Like, I mean, I know like just art in general, you see something like, oh yeah, that. But
it's
weird that they were like, and Kanye West is the target.
Yeah. All right. So, anyways, I'm just gonna make like broad assumptions like that now. I mean, if everybody else can do it, I guess I am too. All right. And then there's the juggling thing, the sarcasm here. All right. Do you want the apples bagged up? Oh man, I juggle. All right. But if I ever have more than 8, bag them up. Which, you know, he's sarcastic, but he's still, you know, charismatic. So it works out because, you know, he's harassing someone who asks him a simple question. the CD signing at an in-store appearance, which, I think this, after following the being a jerk by, you know, being sarcastic to the cashier, where he gained some humility here because sometimes people don't appear at his CD in-store appearances. I think he covers his bases here. I think he's presented as a good guy, so and like affable, and you know he just pretends to be shopping. Dreaming, you know, dreaming takes energy, and it's like, I think dreaming, when he kind of invokes that feeling in people, and seeing him, right? He, you know, he's like a mellow guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there's something special that's going on. Or if you had like a Kevin Hart who's like, yo, dreaming. Well, I'm not gonna say his voice. You know, dreaming. It takes away your energy, right? You'd be like, yeah, I guess. But you know, Mitch Hedberg pulls you in, and you're like, yeah, I kind of want to go to sleep listening to this guy.
Yeah, he feels like somebody that you wouldn't meet in real life, but somebody that you would meet in a dream, and they're like telling you all these weird jokes, and you're just like, what?
Dude, you want to write that short story?
Yeah, that actually, I mean, if you could get the rights
doing like Hedberg?
Mitch Hedberg cartoon where he's like in a dream, like waking life style Mitch Hedberg cartoon.
Wait, is that a thing that already happened?
What?
Oh, you said if you can get the rights. I thought you said if you can get the rights to that cartoon.
Oh, no, get the rights to like Hedberg's, like using Hedberg's likeness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you seen Waking Life?
No.
It's a really good animated cartoon that's centered around philosophy, around like dreaming and death and stuff, but it's really good.
Oh, right. I'll check that out.
Yeah, it's awesome.
What's that on?
I don't know if it's on anything right now. It's, you probably rent it for like a couple bucks on like Amazon or something like that. It might be. I don't know. It might be if you just like Google search like how to stream it. It might be free on something.
Yeah, and that's called Waking Life.
Yep. Yeah, that's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, I would like the idea of like some stand-up who goes to sleep so they can talk to Mitch Hedberg to like get material. And like they have to face the conundrum of like presenting it as his material or the jokes that Mitch Hedberg is telling him from like beyond yeah.
I like that one better. Beyond the Grave, Mitch Hedberg.
Cool. Hey man, would you do me a favor and tell some jokes on my behalf?
I mean, I'd do it. If, like, there was a ghost of Mitch Hedberg in my room, he's like, hey, dude, I wrote some jokes for you. Go read them.
Yeah, like, right. I could take over your body since I'm an acorporal specter, but I'm a lot more chill than that. So could you just do me a favor? Let's see. Oh, yeah, so he talks about dreaming. you know, you should be relaxing, but now you're building a go-kart with your landlord. Don't, you know, if you're trying to go to sleep, don't count endangered species. It's a very one-to-one joke.
Yeah, yep.
It's like maybe the least activity in your brain that has to happen for a joke to be successful.
It's also probably the one that's aged the worst, because now it's like, back then I was like, oh man, some of these are endangered. Now it's like, oh, they're going, okay, it's bad. They're going extinct.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's like in 100 years, there's going to be some kid listening to Mitch Hedberg for the first time coming across this joke and being like, endangered species? Oh, and then they Google it and they're like, oh, these animals used to exist? That's crazy. What, a bear? There's this thing called a bear. When we're all like Amazon employees, right? And try for Uber and Lyft.
Live in Bezos cities.
Yeah,
using Bezos bucks.
Bezos, yeah, and then like, there's a one guy who's like, if we're gonna use Bezos bucks, we might as well say the name correctly. It's Bezos. And then that's the greatest amount of discourse that you get in that sort of city. That's what you're allowed to talk about.
Oh my God. I'll leave.
Become exiled. Let's see.
Figure something else out. There's something else.
The club sandwich thing.
Yeah.
I don't think this should go towards the end.
Why do you say that?
I don't think it's a strong joke. But here's the thing. I think that this joke and its many tags leads to a really great joke. I think this is it's a joke itself that's a setup for another separate joke. The club sandwich that, you know, I'm not even part of the club. How about we cut it up? Then we cut it up one more time. And how do you guys feel about frilly truth picks? Right. Then he talks about, like, you know, I'd like to get a toothpick and throw it into the forest and yell, "You're home." Which I think that's a brilliant joke.
Yeah, that's great. I didn't even catch the setup, to be honest.
There we go. That's where we're on the podcast. We're all right. He talks about being high on stage. People believe that he's high on stage, but why would he ever? You know, he does. This is a philosophical term. He does a reductio absurdum. So it's like, yeah, you believe this? Let me tell you why that's wrong. All right, let me reduce that belief to the absurd. Then he gives a couple of examples, which is different than taking something literally and then giving an example of why that would be absurd to take it literally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he talks about being high on stage, and then that leads to, like, he kind of brings it back to him being a performer, which is kind of, like, you know, where he started, right? By saying, like, hey, we're at a festival, right? With his pass upside down joke.
Mm-hmm.
He brings it back, you know, and that's a very, I don't know. I don't think people realize that. That's like a full circle sort of thing, I guess. We're right back where we started. I'm pointing to the fact that I'm a comedian telling you jokes. And this is a joke that you said you liked, so I'm going to let you talk about being high on stage and the ending joke.
Or not.
he's talking about how, like, the setup of him being, you know, it's like a big crowd. It seems like they're all chasing him, and then they decided to stop and sit down. The last joke, Caleb, I'm gonna cut this out.
Right. All right. So I think that I just think that that's like such a fascinating idea. And, like, I've definitely been in comedy clubs sitting there looking at a comedian, like, why are they? Because sometimes, you know, comedy isn't great. And sometimes there's somebody on stage, you're like, why are we all came in here to listen to this. And we're all still sitting here listening. Like, it's just so weird. And, like, the way that he's able to just bring awareness to everybody in the room again, which is like, hey, look, we're all sitting in this room and it's actually really weird. You guys are all just looking at me, talking to me. And I think that he's able to, like you said, he's able to, like, really reduce something down to, like, the most absurd level, which is something I appreciate immensely. I try to do that with most things.
He's like, this whole act is him trying to implant, like, a different way of perceiving things into your brain.
Right. Yeah. It peels back the, almost like pulls back the curtain on the whole show too. When he does that, it's breaking the fourth wall, but, like, there's no fourth wall, 'cause you're doing stand up. You know what I mean? Like, kind of, he like pulls back the curtain and shows everybody, like, hey, look, like, there's this, look, we're all just in this. It's like being in a dark comedy club and all of a sudden you turn on all the lights and you're like, hey, everybody, remember you're in a club. You're here for the comedy. Just, like, brings everybody's awareness back to what was going on. And, like, it makes the jokes funnier when you make sure that everybody is collectively paying attention.
I would love to do that as an actual bit.
Oh, yeah.
Like, ask them to turn on the lights and be like, oh, now that the lights are on, we can all see that everybody's a little bit uglier. Huh?
There's so much you could do. Start doing crowd work on everybody's appearances.
Yeah, look at this lady. Look at this guy. Bro, I bet you wish the lights were back on. Off, right?
Did you put your makeup on in the dark, too?
Oh. It's a great way to end it, because it's like, yeah, who am I?
Right.
It's very Socratic. I don't know if you know, you've read the dialogues where at some point it's like they're like,
Yeah, but who am I to tell you? I'm just a noble seeker of truth, right? I don't know if what I said is true or persuasive, but I feel like that happens a lot in the Plato's dialogues. And that's, I think that's what Hedberg does. Yeah. It's like, who am I? All right. Mm-hmm. That's it, man. Thanks. we've done 67 minutes now. And we've covered all of the jokes. Is there anything you want to mention about the comedy before we plug your stuff again?
I don't think so. I think Hedberg's pretty well known and everybody kind of already has their own opinion on him. There's not much I'm going to do to convince anybody.
Yeah. I'll repeat that, like, you know, if it wasn't for Hedberg, I wouldn't be doing comedy. Because I remember watching, or the first album I bought was Strategic Grill Locations. Mm-hmm. I bought it at the Tower Records in Pasadena that is no longer there. Before then, I only watched, like, whatever's on Comedy Central, right? But there's something different about having a CD.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, yeah.
Like, then being able to take it to your friend's place and be like, dude, listen to this. But yeah, I'm very happy that this is the standard that we cover for my first episode of the second season. I appreciate you coming on. That was Caleb Chapman. Once again, he does a show with Patrick Lopez. It's a variety show, often with different themes. And some of them, great for charity. Some of them raise funds and donate to different organizations. What organization did you donate the raised funds to for the one that I was on?
The last one was the American Center of... sorry. It was the Foundation for American Suicide Prevention, I think. Let me pull it up quick. I feel like I should know this.
Oh, here it's all right.
American Foundation for Suicide Prevention and then Action Against Hunger.
Perfect. And then, you raised over $300 for that, right?
Yeah. That's cool.
That's awesome. That's what Zoom comedy should always be about.
Right, yeah. It's like, I mean, we're all just sitting at our houses, so it's not like we need money, right? I was about to say that, and I was like, no, we do.
Yeah. So yeah, check out Caleb. Oh wait, Caleb, where can people find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Vacantly Conscious.
And what date is the show, the upcoming one?
Show's going to be February 13th on Zoom, 6 Pacific, 8 Central.
If you buy a ticket, let them know that Dead Frog sent you.
Yes. Tell them Dead Frog sent you with the finger guns. but yeah, so tickets are all donation based. And this one, the charity is the National Alliance to End Homelessness, which, as we have seen even in the last few months, is a major disaster. And we feel like we should do whatever we can to help those people out. So.
All right, and check out the upcoming socialist sketch show. I'm sure you can find updates on that by following Caleb on Instagram, Vacantly Conscious. And then the podcast with Patrick Lopez, the Get Happy podcast. Caleb, I think we've killed that frog.
All right, that sounds awesome. I mean, good?
Yes. All right.
Yeah, okay, because I'm always curious to see what was like the first musing that like, that happened to someone, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
I've talked about mine, like, the first time I did an actual bit on, like, some other, like, it's a story that I tell.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've always been curious about, like, how soon people were struck with the comedy disease.
Right. Yeah, I always think back on that, too. Like, you're like, well, what happened to me? You know what I mean?
yeah. I was a perfectly normal kid, and then I learned how to be funny.
Yeah. And it was downhill from there.
And now I have to pay thousands of dollars for recording equipment and for like a very small turnout.
Right. It's like, should I invest this money or should I? Yeah, no, I should buy more stuff for comedy.
Yeah.